From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Midterm politics are about rendering judgment over a president's first 2 years in office, and they're about finding a compelling winning vision for the next 2 years. So here's what President Trump put forward to voters on Saturday in Florida.
This election will decide whether we build on the extraordinary prosperity that we've achieved or whether we let the radical Democrats take control of Congress and take a giant wrecking ball to our economy and to the future of our nation.
The stakes are indeed high. Former President Barack Obama, campaigning for Democrats, put it this way to voters at a weekend rally in Indiana.
The health care of millions is on the ballot. A fair shake for working families is on the ballot. Perhaps most importantly, the character of our country is on the ballot.
Of course, neither man is directly on the ballot right now, but it is not a stretch to say that those competing visions for America are. This hour on Point, key races, vision, and values in the final run-up to the 2018 midterm elections. And you can join us. What do you think is at stake in this election? What are the issues driving you to the polls tomorrow as you vote for your representative in the House or possibly even your senator or even your governor? Are you looking at the economy, at healthcare, at immigration, or at something even bigger? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us first today from Washington is Lisa Desjardins. She's correspondent for PBS NewsHour. We have a link to her reporting. Will red tide algae in Florida turn some Republican voters blue? That story is linked at onpointradio.org. Lisa, it's good to have you back on the show.
Hi, Meghna. Great to be here.
So first of all, I mean, you've been on the campaign trail in several states recently. How would you characterize what the closing arguments are from both Republicans and Democrats as, you know, we're less than 24 hours away from Election Day?
I think it's pretty simple. For Democrats, it is about health care. For Republicans, it is about immigration. And for both parties, it is about President Trump.
Okay. President Trump, who has been, you know, barnstorming from state to state. I think he's going to be in some three states just today alone. I mean, for Republicans, how much is he driving the core message that members who are aiming for the House or Senate have to follow or feel like they need to follow?
Well, that's a big question because I think there's two parts to that question. Yeah. One, how much will he drive voters,
right?
There's no question that he is affecting, I think, how Republicans talk or if they choose not to talk about immigration, if they choose not to challenge him. He's kind of creating an atmosphere within the Republican Party where Republicans are scared to challenge him on this issue even more than before. But obviously, this is all about the voters, and tomorrow will be a major test. We certainly saw enthusiasm among Republicans go up after the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. And now the White House is bargaining that same kind of backlash momentum can help them on immigration as well. It's not clear if it will or not, especially in the House, where there are many House districts held by Republicans, which are now, Meghna, majority minority. Those are Republicans who are very uncomfortable with the way the president is talking about immigration. They do not think it helps him. But the White House is gambling that getting out the base is the way to go, no longer trying to persuade the people in the middle.
Okay, interesting. Because you've been to Florida recently, and I was reading that, for example, even the Democrats are looking at the Trump factor here. And I see a quote here from Stephen Shale, I believe, a Florida-based Democratic operative. And he said that for a lot of GOP candidates, and he's thinking about the gubernatorial race, for example, in Florida, that he says the calculus is that every voter that surged for Trump is a Trump person first and foremost, and not, in the case of Florida, a DeSantis person or a Scott person. So those Republican candidates are leaning in, and he says, on full Trumpism.
I think that's a misread of what I was experiencing in Florida. To me, what's happening in Florida is more complicated. Now, I think Trump is a prevailing wind down there. It is his allegiance to Trump, your thoughts about President Trump are certainly a very large factor. But what we're really talking about is how Republicans in Florida will vote. And I do think that they might be comfortable with President Trump as president. They are less comfortable with his rhetoric on a state level. Someone from Ron DeSantis, who is an ardent Trump supporter running for governor, has had to try and moderate that rhetoric, even though he supports it, while he's running for governor. So I think there's a different standard in a way looking at state offices than looking at President Trump himself. Also, I do think there is a major effect happening in Florida from the series of environmental problems they've been experiencing, including red tide algae. And that's hitting some very Republican areas on the Gulf Coast, and also the blue-green algae that's hit Lake Okeechobee. That's, you know, almost everyone in Florida cares about the environment. They list it as a high-ranking issue. There are people who think differently about climate change than, say, someone in Nebraska. To them, they see sea levels rising. So I think Florida is more complicated than just voting up or down on President Trump.
Okay, so that's really interesting, Lisa. And in fact, you wrote about the red tide. Again, and we have a link to your reporting at onpointradio.org. But can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I think at the national level, these are the issues that are maybe playing out on the campaign trail that we're not hearing about. So how is this red tide algae factoring in terms of how people are campaigning in Florida?
You know, sometimes you know you're really on the story because you have in your mind who you think the important types of people are, what kind of voices you're looking for, and you don't even have to look for them. Everyone you talk to ends up being that kind of person. And as we were in Florida, especially in the Sarasota and Venice Beach area, that's on the kind of central Gulf Coast, bit south of Tampa, we kept running into Republicans who would call themselves libertarians or conservatives, who said they just cannot vote for Rick Scott, the current governor, because they are so disappointed with him on environmental issues. And they didn't feel halfway about it. They felt strongly. Now, they don't like the Democratic candidate, Bill Nelson, who's been the incumbent senator, but they just felt like Rick Scott has let the state down on the environment, and they think it's time to make a big change. And they feel it strongly, person after person. You know, even we would be at a coffee shop and just talking to voters, and I would hear this from people who are ardent Republicans, but in this case, on these statewide races, they are certainly they're up for grabs at the very least, if not openly angry with some of their statewide Republican candidates.
Oh, absolutely fascinating. Well, Lisa, stand by here for just a second because we're going to drop in on a couple of key states here over the course of the hour to get a sense from reporters in those states about what's been going on in these final days before the midterm elections. So first of all, let's turn to Montana, where there is a very heated race going on between incumbent Democratic Senator John Tester and a Republican Senate candidate Matt Rosendale. So first of all, let's hear a little clip from Senator Tester himself. He's made health care a central topic in his campaign for re-election, as just about every other Democrat across the nation has done. His opponent, again, Matt Rosendale, supports repealing the Affordable Care Act entirely, whereas John Tester says the ACA has done a lot of good.
Look, there was plenty of problems with the ACA that need to be fixed and need to be fixed in a bipartisan way. But just to repeal it and throw all the good things away that bill did is a big mistake. I mean, I've had plenty of debates with folks that say, look, my health care rates are too high. And so this is a problem. We've got to figure out ways to help drive it down for everybody, including women.
Interesting, including women. That's Montana's Democratic Senator incumbent John Tester. And here is his Republican challenger, Matt Rosendale, at a Montana rally this weekend, saying that a vote for him is a vote for President Trump.
You know, folks, John Tester must think we're a bunch of fools. He pretends that he works with President Trump, but it's all talk. He doesn't work with the president at all, as the president just explained to you. On every major issue, tax cuts, building the wall, Supreme Court justices, John Tester stood in the way and voted no. On Tuesday, we can send John Tester and his lobbyist supporters a strong message. Montana is Trump country.
That's Republican Senate candidate Matt Rosendale in Montana. And joining us now from Helena is Corin Cates Carney, politics and policy reporter for Montana Public Radio. We have a link to his reporting at onpointradio.org. Corin, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So give us a sense. I mean, how heated, how close is this race between Senator Tester and Matt Rosendale on the last day before the midterms?
Analysts have been saying this race has kind of continually been getting closer throughout the process. It was originally kind of Tester. It was his race to lose going into the race. And now it's pollsters are saying it's a toss-up, and campaigns are treating it like it's going to be a close finish.
So it's a really important race then for both parties, because Montana is one of the places where Republicans could look to flip the state and then increase their majority in the Senate, perhaps.
Yeah, Senator Tester is Montana's senior senator. He is definitely one of the most powerful political figures in Montana, and Democrats see that as a pretty valuable seat. And if they can flip that, that would be a big deal.
Okay, so this message that the Republican challenger Matt Rosendale has been putting out here, we heard that in this clip, that a vote for him is essentially a vote for President Trump. How much is that resonating with Republican or independent voters in Montana?
President Trump is still the most popular figure, political figure in Montana. Recent polls show that he's more popular than the governor, who also won re-election in 2016. And so the campaign promise to kind of pledge support for Trump is a big deal. You know, at those rallies that Rosendale is visiting with the president, voters in line there, you know, they don't really mention Rosendale as much as they do. They want to support the president, and that promise of a vote for Rosendale is a vote for a president, for the President Trump. That's a reason a lot of voters in Montana want to cast a vote for Rosendale.
So a powerful message there. But we also heard John Tester talking about health care, as every Democrat has been doing solidly for the past year. Is that something that Montanans are listening to?
That's one of those issues that no matter who you talk to in Montana, it's one of the biggest issues. Healthcare is already something hard to get access and affordable healthcare in a rural state like Montana. And so pre-existing conditions is a big thing when talking to voters. And everyone agrees that it needs to be fixed. And it's kind of unclear on what the solution is going to be. Rosendale is promising to repeal and replace. But Tester is saying, you know, we need to fix what we have. And some voters, especially the Democratic voters, are buying into that.
Interesting. So a toss-up as we go into the midterm, to Election Day in Montana. Corin Cates-Carney, politics and policy reporter for Montana Public Radio, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're talking about vision and competing visions for America and what you will be thinking about as you decide to cast your ballot in the midterm elections. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the competing visions for the character of the country, those closing arguments that we're hearing in the last day before the 2018 midterm elections. And we want to hear from you. What are the values and the visions that you want for the future of the country? And which one of the candidates that you're going to be voting for best ascribes or is forwarding that value and that vision? And I'm joined this hour by Lisa Desjardins. She's with us from Washington. She's a correspondent for PBS NewsHour. She's been traveling a lot and spending key time on the campaign trail in places such as Florida, Missouri, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And Lisa, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us, so let me just get a couple of them in here while I can. Steve is calling from Tampa, Florida. Steve, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to comment a little bit on what Lisa's been saying about the temperature of Florida and what's going on down here in the election. First of all, trying to use red tide as a political argument or a way to defeat Rick Scott is kind of absurd. It's not Rick's fault. It's not Donald Trump's fault. It's a natural occurring event. It's been going on. I've been down here since 1980. It's been going on since then. So the people of Florida like the environment. I mean, it's a, you know, the nature state, and we have wonderful climate down here. We've got very clean air. We've got very clean water. So it's becoming a political issue, and Bill Nelson's been in, you know, the Senate for almost my entire lifetime. And I haven't seen too much action from him regarding that.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at that as being an issue that is important to Floridians, but it's not a political issue. And when you try to politicize a naturally occurring event like this, it just looks stupid.
Yeah. So, Steve, hang on. I'm going to get you your second point here for a second. But about that red tide here, we've got a comment coming in on Facebook. Chris McPhail says, quote, "In Florida, environment is the key. We don't need any more of the red tide that was exasperated by big business as a result," and these are Chris's words, "of our idiot governor, Rick Scott." Yeah, red tide has been around forever, but man has recently made it much more deadly. What do you think about that, Steve?
Ask him which big business he's talking about, because there hasn't been an enormous influx of big businesses or increases in phosphate mining or any of the other things that you want. Maybe if you want to blame it on something, blame it on the housing growth where people use fertilizer on their lawn. But it's not big business that's causing red tide.
All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for your call. Lisa, you want to respond?
Absolutely. That is the argument Republicans are making. They're saying this is not fair to Rick Scott. This is an environmental problem that could happen at any time and has happened for hundreds of years. But the truth is, whether you think it should be a political issue or not, that's fair to debate. But it is a political problem for Rick Scott, as you heard from Chris, who wrote in.
Okay. Well, let's go to Casey, who's calling from Gothenburg, Nebraska. Casey, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call. So my main concern, and I find it very interesting that Lisa did make a shout out to Nebraska, where there is this huge amount of emotional charge in this election, right? There's a lot of visceral reactions in how people are making their decisions. And people, I'm finding, are very far right or far left, right? Mm-hmm. And so in Nebraska specifically, there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of back talk in regards to people saying that they're willing to work bipartisan and in a bipartisan manner going across their party lines. But they go back on that when they go exactly against that point that they're trying to make and voting on party lines. And so when I'm making my vote, I'm looking at those candidates that are willing to work across party lines in order to actually get things achieved.
So you're looking at their actual voting records then?
Absolutely.
Okay, and who do you see that you like then, Casey?
So I've been following Laura Ebke for a while. She calls herself a libertarian, so she switched from the Republican Party, and she has been directly attacked on Facebook on a number of occasions, and just the visceral reactions that these attacks bring out in the sphere of social media do make an impact on the voter. And so in the age of misinformation, people who use social media as their only source will look to that. And it does make an impact on who they decide to vote for.
Right. Well, Casey, thank you so much for your call. Lisa, what do you say?
Right. Nebraska is a really great state to watch because there's among the races there is a toss-up race for the House of Representatives between a freshman Republican, Don Bacon, who is a former Bronze Star medal winner, I believe, and we're running against a rather progressive Democrat, a woman named Karen Eastman. She's not the candidate that Democrats in Washington wanted. She's more left than they wanted, but she's still making that a race. It's barely in his favor right now. And there you're talking about the heart of the Midwest. Now, it's Omaha. So, you know, this is more of an urban district than most of the Midwest. But it is a fascinating place to watch if there will be purple or blue strongholds emerging more and more in very red states like Nebraska.
OK, so, Lisa, let's shift gears here for a minute. And I just want to talk more about sort of the closing messages that we've been hearing from both Democrats and Republicans in the past week and whether or not you've detected a shift in those messages, because specifically, you know, I'm thinking about President Trump in rally after rally, and even his campaign put out a very deeply anti-immigration ad. I mean, he's been talking about the caravan, really fomenting fear about immigration and making claims about Democrats, which is interesting. I mean, that worked for him in 2016, so perhaps it makes perfect sense that he would put that at the center of his efforts to get Republicans back into office in 2018. But he also had that really good jobs report that just came out. And I wonder if there are some Republicans out there who were hoping that the president would focus more on that positive economic news than he is on immigration. But maybe he's starting to do that, too.
He does mention the good economy in his speech, but he more mentions it than focuses on it. And in fact, former President Barack Obama on the trail for Democrats likes to bring this up. He likes to talk to his crowds and say, hey, isn't it funny that President Trump isn't talking about the tax cut that much, isn't talking about the economy? And his point, former President Obama's, is he's trying to scare you. He's focusing on these topics that are built on fear and, in some Democrats would say, on hate. And I think that you see two different things happening. There is a very worthwhile, I think, discussion about the rhetoric that President Trump is using right now, and in specific, the words and the appeals he uses in different parts of the country. For example, when he talks in the Midwest, one of his closing paragraphs evokes the spirit of pioneers. And he says to the people in the crowd, you know, your pioneer ancestors worked the land. They came here. They worked hard. They built this. They want this country to be secure. You know, and that's obviously a message that is for people whose family have been here for generations, and also for people whose family probably were not slaves. In Florida, that message changes a little. The president speaks to military, your family who were military members. But I think he's doing several things here. All of it is basically whatever you want to talk about, right or wrong, good or bad, harmful or not. It is all to drive out the Republican base. That is his point. Democrats are doing the exact same thing. And they're also using President Trump's own words because they know that that is what's activating their base. The Democratic base is more scared of President Trump than of anything else. And that's bringing them out.
Hmm. Well, let's go out to Arizona now, where a really interesting Senate race there has captured, obviously, Arizonans and national attention as well. And that's the race between Democrat Kyrsten Sinema and Republican Martha McSally. And late last month, Sinema accused Martha McSally of running a deeply negative campaign. And Sinema said she thinks that's unfortunate because she believes it's distracting from Arizonans' real concerns.
And I travel the state, and as I listen to folks around the state, they are saying the same couple things to me over and over again. They're concerned about health care. They're very concerned about education. They're concerned about jobs and taking care of their families.
That's Democrat Kyrsten Sinema in the Arizona Senate race. And if you look over on the Republican side, Martha McSally is actually saying, hey, it's Kyrsten Sinema who's running a negative campaign, even though she might claim, as we just heard in that piece of tape, that she's running on issues. So here's Martha McSally.
I've had over $15 million of negative attacks by Kyrsten Sinema's campaign and her allies since this started. So this is a nice scripted talking point. But the reality is, there's an example of an ad in there from her campaign calling me morally bankrupt.
That's Republican Martha McSally in the Arizona Senate race. Well, joining us now from Phoenix is Ron Hansen. He's congressional reporter for the Arizona Republic, and we've got links to his reporting at onpointradio.org. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for having me.
So we've talked a lot about the Arizona race over the past couple of weeks. How is it shaping up here in the last day before the midterms?
You know, by all accounts, this race seems to be heading down to the finish line as close as it was when we started shortly after the primary. That I don't think either one of these women has been able to separate by much, and we expect that we may not know who won this race by Tuesday night. It may be closer to the end of the week.
Wow. So we're talking, I mean, that's sort of a hair's breadth difference between them, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a competitive race. That's a new thing for Democrats in Arizona in the Senate. They haven't won a Senate race since 1988. And so to be in this position where it's nail-biting is, something that is new and presumably good for Democrats.
And so why is that? Why is it so close right now?
You know, I think a lot of this stems from the Trump backlash that we've seen from a lot of independents. A lot of women have broken away from the Republican candidate. We've also seen a very strong Democrat in Kyrsten Sinema who has significant appeal to independent voters who are, basically 35% of the electorate here. There are as many independents as there are Republicans. And so she has this political brand that has allowed her to compete with this very sizable swath of voters.
Oh. So this is the race to replace Senator Jeff Flake, right, who of course, is not running for re-election.
That's right. A lot of folks may be confused about this. Rudy Giuliani was last week. This is not to replace John McCain. This is to fill the next term after retiring Jeff Flake.
Okay, so then, I mean, the question we've been asking everyone this hour is how much should we be looking at this Senate race through the prism of a referendum on President Trump?
I think that's a pretty reasonable way to view this race in many ways. This is something that, all things equal, you would expect a Republican to do pretty well in any Senate race here. As I said, it's been 30 years since a Democrat has broken through. So to be in a different position today is to suggest that something is fundamentally different about this cycle, and clearly the president and how he is viewed, his priorities, style, all that is sort of been on the table here and been pretty well litigated.
Right. You know, we've been talking a lot about how immigration is playing and in this election and how important it is to certain voters. And of course, the president's campaign released a sort of virulently anti-immigrant ad, web ad, in the past couple of days here. I mean, is that issue continuing to be a sort of animating factor in voters in Arizona?
Yeah, it is. And I would, you know, just mention that campaign ad that you're referencing has an Arizona component
yeah.
to it as well, involving our former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio. This is an issue that is something that has not really gone away in over a decade. It has waxed and waned in terms of its importance overall, but there are a lot of folks here, especially on the conservative side, who feel that this is something that has been unresolved and left to drag down the economy and represents a security issue. And so this is something that resonates with a lot of conservatives, but it also resonates with a lot of liberals and Democrats and those in the Hispanic community here who think that this has gone too far and gone on too long.
Yeah. So just so that we're clear for people listening here, can you explain a little bit more about this? Is about this campaign ad and its link to former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, right? Because the ad talks about an undocumented immigrant who killed a police officer, right? And what's the link then to Joe Arpaio?
Well, this is somebody who had been apprehended in Arizona and was released, under Republican control, as well as Democratic control, but had been released from custody in Maricopa County. The rub of the ad is to suggest that, you know, this is a partisan problem, that it's Democrats who want to let people like this go free and threaten your communities. And the point here being just that this is someone whose release happened on Republican watch as well. So it really shouldn't be viewed in a partisan way.
Well, Ron Hansen, congressional reporter for the Arizona Republic. We have links to his story. His latest story is Kyrsten Sinema and Martha McSally's House voting records put them in the political middle. That's at onpointradio.org. Ron Hansen, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me.
So, Lisa Desjardins, what do you hear in Ron's description of the final hour, day and hours of the Arizona race?
I love it. A barn burner in Arizona. Fantastic. And those are two fascinating candidates. Both of them have incredible personal stories. They're both kind of dream candidates for each party, and that's why it's such a good race to watch.
All right. Let's see if we can sneak a call in here before we have to take a break. Steve is calling from Orono, Maine. You're on the air, Steve.
Hi. I see this as basically a race for the soul of America. I mean, I'm 62. I see that. I really do. For example, the District 2 race up in Maine is very tight, as you're probably all aware. There's a governor race that's very tight. But, for example, the Republican candidate running doesn't even mention his opponent today. He talks about Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi. I mean, that, you know, if you vote for the Democrats in Maine, you're voting for the Washington elite and the money, even though our Senator Collins, her 70% of her money for her campaign chest comes from where? 30 miles of Washington, D.C. I mean, that's the way politics are. But I think it's, if you go to any state, and my friends I'm talking with across the country, that is the talk. It's about, we're voting against the president, and if you're voting for Democrats, you're voting for, you know, you're voting for Hillary Clinton and
right.
Maxine Waters and Nancy. They're vilifying these people that aren't in the race,
Steve,
aren't even
See, let me just jump in here. Let me just jump in here for a second, because I take your point. And since you mentioned Senator Collins, of course, Senator from Maine, she's not running for re-election in this midterm, but she's going to be up for re-election in a couple of years. I mean, what do you think the tone of political conversation in Maine now says for the future of your senator?
Well, I think it's a crapshoot. I mean, I really do. I think the other which you've talked about before is the younger voters. They're getting younger that are voting, and they see politics in a different tone, and they want people who talk like President Obama. They don't want people who talk like President Trump.
Well, Steve, thank you so very much for your call. We are talking about competing visions, perhaps competing values, but what you're thinking about when you cast your vote in the 2018 midterm elections. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the closing arguments that Republicans and Democrats are giving in the final day before the midterm elections. And perhaps is this a question of competing visions and values for the future of America? And if so, what vision, what set of values are driving you to the polls? And I'm joined this hour by Lisa Desjardins. She's with us from Washington. She's a correspondent for PBS NewsHour. She's been out on the campaign trail in Florida, Missouri, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. We've got links to her reporting at onpointradio.org. And we've been dropping in on key states over the course of this hour. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening in Tennessee and a race there specifically for Senate. So first of all, let's listen to the final pitch to voters that Democratic Senate candidate Phil Bredesen is giving as he's trying to distance himself from any one political party and saying he's willing to work with anyone who has a good idea.
Look, you got to belong to a party to run in politics, but my obligation is to the people of Tennessee, and whether it's the president or one of the parties, if they're for something that I think is really good for the people I'm representing, I need to be for it. But if they're not, I don't feel any responsibility to put the Democratic Party or anybody else ahead of the people of Tennessee.
So that's Democrat Phil Bredesen. Last night at a rally in Tennessee, Republican Marsha Blackburn invoked the president's agenda and accomplishments. She also invoked Hillary Clinton in her final pitch to voters.
If you want to have somebody who's going to support more constitutional judges and is going to be there to support tax cuts, be there to build the wall, I ask you to... I ask you to stand with me, and if you want to vote no on Hillary Clinton and her cronies one more time, stand with me.
Well, that is Republican Marsha Blackburn at a rally last night in Tennessee. And joining us right now from Nashville is Sergio Martinez Beltran. He's a politics reporter for Nashville Public Radio. Sergio, it's good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Meghna.
So tell us about this race between Blackburn and Bredesen. How close is it?
Well, just to give you a little bit of context, about $56 million has been poured into this Tennessee U.S. Senate race from outside PAC's groups, many of them associated to Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer. So that gives you an idea of, you know, how close this race is. In fact, it's the most expensive U.S. Senate race in the state.
Wow. Okay. And I am seeing also that another measure of how close this is that is this the tightest Senate race that Tennessee has had in a decade?
That's right. That's what people are saying. It's very tight. Latest polls, you know, they show sometimes Blackburn ahead of Bredesen or vice versa. So we are not relying, you know, on polls necessarily because it's a very close race between two candidates that are very known in the state.
Okay, so tell us then why you know, from your reporting and talking to Tennesseans over the past year, what has brought this race so close? I mean, are people surprised given that Tennessee is, you know, a very Republican-leaning state?
Right. I mean, President Trump is very popular in the state. Marsha Blackburn is a strong supporter of President Trump. You know, President Trump has come twice to the state in the last couple of months. So it should not be a surprise. Now, there's a couple of things that have come up. Affordable Care Act has been, or Medicaid, you know, that has been an issue that people have talked a lot about. Immigration as well, and also Justice Kavanaugh hearings. That's been something that has put the race close. Blackburn has been a supporter, again, of President Trump since day one, and a supporter of Justice Kavanaugh and everything that represents Trump's policies. Now, Bredesen is running as a centrist Democrat, which is different than what we see in other states. So Bredesen is running as this moderate Democrat. He said that, you know, he's been open about how he thinks that Democratic leadership in the Senate right now should be, you know, changed. He has said he would not be supporting Chuck Schumer if elected to the Senate. So you have someone that is a hardliner Trump supporter, and then you have someone that is a centrist Democrat that is appealing to those moderate Republicans who might not be sold with President Trump's agenda.
Yeah. And just to reiterate your point, Sergio, about that these are known candidates to Tennesseans, right? Because Marsha Blackburn, of course, a congresswoman right now, so who's got a voting record for her House district. And Phil Bredesen, just to be clear, former governor of Tennessee.
Former governor from Tennessee from 2003 to 2011, and he was also the mayor of Nashville before that.
Okay. So, Sergio, hang on here for just a second, because we've got a caller from Tennessee. I want to go to him. Jim is calling from Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Marsha Blackburn has really hitched herself to the closing argument of Trump in these last few weeks, which is really just an avalanche of lies and fear focused especially on immigration. The scary images of brown hordes coming toward our border have been very prominent in these campaign ads. And so I'd like to suggest that what is a referendum in this election is not just Trump, but on the very concept of truth itself, whether truth still matters, or are we living in a truly postmodern Trumpian world where facts don't matter and words can mean anything and everything. Mm. And the only fixed point of reference is that loudest voice in the room and his Twitter feed. I fear that is the vision and the premise upon which Republicans are campaigning now, and they may be validated in that.
Okay. So, Jim, hang on here for just a second, because I want to reflect with you on some things that, for example, the Washington Post recently, in one of its recent articles over the weekend, quoted some of the president's supporters at a rally that he gave in Florida on Wednesday. And we have, some of the president's most ardent supporters saying, quote, presidents should tell the truth, but sometimes they make mistakes. At least Trump tells it like it is. He's a truth teller. Another one saying, I don't think he lies. He gets excited when he's talking. He likes to exaggerate a little bit, but that's just his way. So you're seeing this as a referendum on the truth, but the president's supporters, I think they obviously are seeing it a little differently. What's your response to that?
Well, that in itself is a pretty clear expression of the Trumpian worldview, where the truth is not something to be found out there in the world, and then a journalist such as yourself will report on that to an audience, but rather truth is something you conjure inside your own head based on your fears, your impulses, and then you project that out into the world. And if a reporter then reports something different, that then is defined as fake news.
Yeah. Well, Jim,
I think that is the dystopia we're headed for.
Jim, thank you so much for your call. That's Jim from Gatlinburg, Tennessee. So let me turn back to Sergio Martinez Beltran in Nashville. So, Sergio, you heard Jim really seeing this as a referendum on something as core and basic as truth. Have you been hearing sort of similar depths of feeling or or how voters are conceiving of this midterm election in Tennessee?
Absolutely. And we can see it with the ads, the attack ads related to this Senate race. We have Marsha Blackburn or groups that are affiliated to Marsha Blackburn, accusing Governor Bredesen of shielding a top aide when he was governor from sexual harassment, saying that he shredded the sexual harassment notes, the investigation, that he shredded them, to protect this aide. Bredesen has said that he did it to protect the victim. And then we have the Bredesen campaign or groups affiliated with the Bredesen campaign calling Marsha Blackburn a liar. So we can see it down here. And one of the things that Jim was talking about, he was talking about immigration. Blackburn, has used similar lines as President Trump. She, lately with the caravan of migrants approaching the U.S., she has characterized them as an invading force. And that's something similar to what President Trump has been calling her, calling the group of migrants, even though there is no proof of that. There's no proof that they are criminals, right? So we can see how both of them, are attacking each other with truth or with lies. They're trying to, it's a referendum on truth, like Jim is saying, and I think Tennesseans here can see that as well.
Yeah, and so, Sergio, one last quick question here. Ron Hansen in Arizona told us a little earlier in the show that it's so close in Arizona, they might not have a final result by the end of the day Tuesday. Is it that close in Tennessee also, or do you think that one of them will eke out a pretty clear win by the end of the day?
Well, I can tell you my newsroom expects to have the results on the same night. We're not sure yet. It depends the counties, of course. But we think it's going to be very close. We do think that early voting numbers, the counties are going to start releasing them around 7:30 at night on Election Day. Those early voting numbers may be indicative of who's going to be the winner in the gubernatorial race, because that race is not as close. But in terms of the U.S. Senate race, we are not sure that those numbers are going to, clearly indicate who's going to be the winner.
Right. Well, Sergio Martinez Beltran speaking to us from Nashville, politics reporter for Nashville Public Radio. Thank you so much, Sergio.
Thank you.
Lisa Desjardins.
It's a tough one. Don't worry.
People always tell me I talk too fast. I got to slow down a little bit here. But, there's a lot at stake. So what do you hear in Sergio's reporting from Tennessee?
So much. The fact that it really it's kind of the same story as we heard from Arizona as well, where it is a race that is coming down to the momentum and the dynamics in this final day. And there you have conservative Marsha Blackburn kind of going all in with the president. And we're going to find out in the next day if that pays off for her or not. It's interesting. That race in Tennessee, I also like to watch because it's a reverse gender split.
Yeah.
We talk so much about female voters, but what's happening there is the Democrat male contender Phil Bredesen is winning with women. Marsha Blackburn, the female Republican, is winning with men. So often we think women vote for women. Actually, it is more about party in a way when you look at gender splits. And right now it looks like Marsha Blackburn is gaining more with women than Phil Bredesen is gaining with men.
Interesting. So we've got 5 minutes left here. Let's see how many calls we can roll through. Okay, Lisa. So let's go to Freddie, who's calling from Tucson, Arizona. Freddie, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Hey, I wanted to talk about the candidate McSally. I'm a retired aviation specialist. I'm McSally's age. I grew up fighting hard to do an unconventional job. All of my default settings, I'm an independent. I have been for decades. I vote for both parties based on who I really think is going to solve problems. I can't vote for McSally, even though all of my default settings personally, morally want to vote for her. Because she won't show up for any interviews that any media wants to do throughout the state, whether it be liberal or conservative. The Arizona Republic newspaper, which never endorses Democratic candidates, even endorsed Sinema. Sinema presents a person who wants to work to solve problems. She doesn't care what party you're from.
Yeah.
McSally, for me, represents the new alligators that Trump is stuffing into his personal swamp. He said he wanted to drain the swamp, and yet he's putting in people who seem to be serving their own personal positions and right. gains for power. I think Zinke is another example of that kind of new Trumpian candidate.
Well, Freddie, forgive me for taking the call back from you here, but I really appreciate your call. That's Freddie's view from Tucson, Arizona, about the downside she sees of Martha McSally really hitching her wagon to President Trump. Let's go to Iowa City, Iowa, where Georgia's calling. You're on the air, Georgia.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a list, but I basically know that I voted because I'm a retiree. I'm tired of hearing that Medicare and Social Security are entitlements when actually we've paid into the system all these years. And I worry about the value system and the divisiveness and the lack of dialogue mm-hmm. that is safe to have with even sometimes family members or best friends. And I really do think that words matter and also that laws apply to the president. So from day one, I have not liked President Trump for many of those value-based, law-based reasons and have hoped the whole 2 years that he would surprise me, and he has not. So I would not support Trump for anything. And I feel like he is a real negative influence and divisive as far as any value system that I would have.
Yeah. Well, Georgia, thank you so much for your call here. It looks like we got a lot of callers from Iowa, so let's try to get one more in there. Kurt is calling from Des Moines, Iowa. And Kurt, you just heard your fellow Iowan there, Georgia, saying that she has failed to be surprised by the president yet in a positive way, so she couldn't vote for anyone who's associating themselves with President Trump. What do you think about that, Kurt?
Yeah, I kind of agree. And I think, Iowa being a purple state in 2020 coming up, we've swung pretty far to the right, both statewide and nationally in our offices. And I think it'll be interesting to see. We've got a lot of three close congressional races and a close gubernatorial race. You know, it'll be interesting to see how far Iowa swings to the left, and it might give us some idea of what kind of Democratic candidate we might be looking for in 2020.
Kurt, thank you so much for your call. I have to say, while I appreciate what Kurt is doing in sort of bringing our attention to what impact the midterms are going to have on the 2020 election, Lisa Desjardins, let me turn back to you. I know, right? Like, we're in the perpetual forever election cycle in America now. But you know, you just heard all those callers feeling very strongly about what they do see believe is at stake in this country, no matter, you know, sort of how they're going to vote or who they're going to vote for. Have you ever seen anything like this? I mean, I feel like every political election in this country is fraught, but the tenor is remarkably different this time around.
Well, I think 2008 obviously was another election where the country was trying to figure out its direction. And there were great passions and reactions to the Bush administration going back way. So I think there's some of that dynamic here, but there wasn't the same anger that we have now on both sides. And I think I want to say just in general, we're watching, of course, the balance of power. The governor's races are going to be very important. But I think everyone should also look at this election in a different way. There could be a generational shift happening in this election where we see more young people, more first-time candidates running, including in Iowa, to speak to your callers, a woman who could become one of the youngest women in Congress ever. So there's going to be sort of fresh ideas potentially coming in, regardless of which party does well.
Well, Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for PBS NewsHour, we have a link to her terrific reporting at onpointradio.org. She's been in Florida, Missouri, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, and with us this hour from Washington. Lisa, thank you so very much.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
And folks, we've been talking about the midterms a lot over the past month or two, so now it's just up to you. Get out there and vote. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.